From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Ketchikan summer campers are spending time each week learning about Filipino culture. KRBD's Reagan Miller stopped by camp on Tuesday to watch the kids practice their traditional dance steps in the sunshine.
Dozens of feet clad in flip-flops, Crocs, and sneakers pounded the wooden deck of Ketchikan Charter School. Kids clapped out a beat for their friends as they weaved their steps across the pattern on the floor. It's the type of day many in Ketchikan would call a scorcher, and the kids who signed up for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Recreation Center summer camp are having some fun in the sun. For weeks, they've been learning the traditional Filipino dance tinikling. Alma Manabat Parker is the health equity coordinator at the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition. She's also the director of Magsayawan Ketchikan, a project under the coalition's Strengthening Cultural Unity Task Force. She's coaching the campers through various moves.
Ready, you're gonna go in, hop in two times. Go in, hop, and then cross.
They've been building their skills each week. McKenna Johansson is one of the camp's lead counselors. She says these sessions are a regular part of camp Monday through Thursday.
It's been great to see them. Just, they all have fun during culture, and they're always coming back and saying, oh my gosh, we did this today, and this was so much fun, and they love doing the dancing portion of it. And they, like, will go down to recess and practice it down there, and they're just talking about it until the next week, and they get to do it again.
And it's more than the dancing, too. There are stories and music, and the kids are learning to count in Tagalog. The lessons are funded by the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Ruby Coomer will be a fourth grader when school starts back up. She says she's enjoying the weekly visits.
Well, it's just when you get good at it, you can just not even have to, you can just go unconsciousness and just go and just follow your steps.
Coomer says she's not a dancer, but she still finds joy in the lessons.
It inspires me a lot, though.
Another camper, Leah Estrada, says she's been learning about the history of the Philippines and about the country's culture.
They're very authentic, and they love dance.
Next week, students will start practicing with the bamboo sticks that play a big role in the traditional dance. But for now, they're putting it all together. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
After a couple of setbacks, youth advocates of Sitka can now move forward with plans to create a residential treatment program for teens and young adults experiencing homelessness in Sitka. Earlier this year, the group had applied for a permit to convert a duplex into the facility, but it was initially denied by the local planning commission. The nonprofit successfully appealed that decision before the Sitka Assembly last week. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Youth Advocates of Sitka, or YAS, scored the $2 million federal grant to develop the residential treatment facility last year. Dubbed Coastal Haven, the pilot program would house around a dozen teens and young adults, providing them with mental health services, wilderness therapy, and life skills training. But the program hit its first snag in January when the Planning Commission denied YAS's first permit application to convert a duplex on Dodge Circle. The local nonprofit went back to the drawing board, this time landing on a duplex on State Highway Halibut Point Road. But in April, they were again denied their permit, this time on a split vote. The reason for the permit denial was twofold. The Planning Commission found the facility would affect the character of the neighborhood and found the R1 zoning incompatible. It also cited unified dissent of the neighbors. Amanda Johnson was one of the dissenting voices with concerns about safety and the HPR location.
It's not just the safety of myself and my family. It is concerns about the safety for the clients at this residence, being protected, being able to get to and from town, and their privacy at this residence. It's not so much the neighbor's privacy is the concern. It's the fact that when they're sharing that beach, when they're in the house, they're in a fishbowl.
Testimony from neighbors ranged from questions about YAS filing its appeal after the deadline to worries about privacy, noise, and other programming questions. Several also said they felt like YAS hadn't done enough outreach to the neighborhood. supporters of YAS challenged some of these concerns. Wendy Leverett called for the assembly to grant the appeal and said that the YAS facility needs to be in a neighborhood, even though she felt no matter what neighborhood they tried to move into, they'd get pushback.
And I get why people are nervous. There are a lot of unknowns welcoming something like this into your own backyard, so to speak. They're youth. These kids have been hurt. These kids, these young people have been through more than we understand, and it wasn't their fault. The only hope they have of having a healthy, normal life is to be in a regular neighborhood and feel like regular people and learn what healthy is and what it looks like and what they could have.
In its appeal before the assembly, YAS argued that the Planning Commission, in denying the permit, had both overturned an application that met the conditional use requirements under city code and also violated the Fair Housing Act, which prohibits housing discrimination. YAS Executive Director Heather Murray said that if the assembly didn't overturn the Planning Commission's decision, they would file a housing discrimination report to the Office of Housing and Urban Development, the federal department that awarded the grant. And Murray submitted an additional stack of documents to the assembly for review, including the organization's policies on noise and quiet hours, and a request for reasonable accommodations for persons with disabilities under the Fair Housing Act. But when it came time for the assembly to deliberate, they steered clear of the constitutional question of whether the permit denial was discriminatory. Instead, they kept most of their comments to city code and whether the application had met the threshold for the Planning Commission to approve it. Assemblymember J.J. Carlson said from her research and looking through YAS's proposal, they'd met those requirements.
They've met the reducing of hazardous conditions by, you know, mitigating what they need for public health, which is like potential noise. I mean, this isn't a paint factory. This isn't some sort of like, there's no downside here to housing people.
And the rest of the assembly agreed. Assemblymember Crystal Duncan said when reviewing the materials, she'd expected to find a hole in YAS's mitigation measures, but she didn't.
I feel like they have been tested and required to rise above somebody who wanted to operate a business would have to do.
The assembly found that YAS had met the 6 requirements for a conditional use permit under city code and voted to grant their appeal, making one adjustment to reduce the number of beds that YAS would serve by 2. And while the decision was unanimous, most members acknowledged the pushback from neighbors, and Assemblymember Tim Pike said he hoped YAS would consider that moving forward.
There's no winning, so to speak, in this environment, and that both sides actually, in this case, have quite a few points that are quite good. So I hope that YAS has heard that they have some work to do with their neighborhood.
During her appeal, YAS Director Murray perhaps summed up best what's next for the organization now that they can move forward with purchasing the home on Halibut Point Road. YAS is a good neighbor, she said. We will show everyone we are a good neighbor, and if you give us our permit, we will prove you all wrong. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Alaska doesn't have many ticks, for now. But Dr. Mika Hahn, associate professor at the University of Alaska at Anchorage, says that could change. As winters become milder, the tiny blood-sucking parasites are able to survive further and further north. Hahn says the western deer tick, known for carrying Lyme disease, has found its way up into British Columbia.
We're seeing that the edge of their population is creeping northward, and that's definitely related to climate change and being able to support populations at higher latitudes.
Alaska does have some native ticks, but human encounters aren't very common. Many prefer feeding on wildlife like voles and squirrels. Hahn says it's important for Alaskans to be informed.
There's lots of room for education. I think a lot of Alaskans don't know that we actually have any ticks in the state.
The Alaska Department of Health released a report by Hahn on Wednesday detailing the presence of ticks in the state. Hahn says the report is an account of years of research that started back in 2010. In addition to climate modeling, researchers collected over 2,000 ticks, mainly through Hahn's Submit a Tick program. The program started in 2018 and lets anyone who finds a tick mail it in a crush-proof container to the state veterinarian's office for identification and pathogen testing. Out of all the ticks they collected, only one carried the bacteria which causes Lyme disease and had hitched a ride to Alaska on a dog who traveled from New York. It's currently 76 degrees and a little bit cloudy here in Juneau. This is KTOO.